We're holding on Kuf Vav lines from the bottom.
I get it.
Yeah.
Malchim Mizian, that's Malchim Mizian. Okay. We're still in the middle of discussing Duma. We finished off yesterday with the plot, how he told Volok to entrap the Jewish people, and sure enough, they ended up getting entrapped by Bnei Tzmoyev using that whole elaborate plan. So now let's continue. The pasuk says, "Ves Malchim Midian Hogu Achal Aleihem." Remember, the pasuk says that when it came to the war against Midian in Parshas Matos, it says the kings of Midian, they killed Achal Aleihem together with, meaning on the face of it, it means together with the other dead ones, together with the other corpses. And the pasuk continues, "Es Bilam Ben Ba'ur Hogu B'Chorev." Then it continues that they also killed Bilam Ben Ba'ur by the sword.
Who is that?
Bilam. The Jewish people, when they went to war against Midian. The question is, Bilam, my boy, awesome. What is Bilam doing over there? Bilam is from Aram Naharaim in the first place. Min Aram Yancheni Bolok, he says in one of his brachas. So,
what is he doing Midian?
That's the question. Once Bolok told him, get out of here, you didn't manage to bench the Jewish people anyway, what do I need you here for? Go back to your hometown. Why isn't he back in Aram Naharaim? What's he doing in Midian that the Jewish people should catch him? He went to get his payment for the fact. Look, my advice was successful. 24,000 Jews died because of my advice. I want my payment. That's the end. The end of Parshas Balak.
Yeah.
And then while he was trying to get his payment, he got killed. This is like the expression people say. The camel went to go and get itself horns. What ended up happening is even the ear, not only he didn't get horns, but even the ears that the camel already had got chopped off him. The same way, like Bilam tried to get more than he had. He was greedy for money, as Rashi tells us in the Psukim over there. He wanted this money for his advice having been successful. He wanted like horns, and in the end, he even lost his ears. He got killed. Now, in a different place, in Sefer Yoshua, it also mentions that they killed Bilam. Bilam ben Ba'ur the Kosim, the magician. The question is, what do you mean, Kosim? Nobi. He was a Nobi.
Mm-hmm. Kosim is a magician.
Kosim is a magician.
No,
but that's the question. Why is the pasuk in Yeshua calling him only a kosim if he was on a greater level, if he was a Navi? So Rabbi Yechanan says, yes, originally he was a Navi, but then afterwards, so Rashi says when he wanted to curse the Jewish people, then that was taken away from him and he became a kosim. Maral says differently, it means v'chlal, we know it says that Moshe Rabbeinu asked after the Chet HaEgel that the Shechina should never rest on Goyim, that you should never have Nevi'im from among the Goyim again. Well, because he wanted the Eivishter to demonstrate publicly that the Jewish people are unique in the world. So therefore, at that point, up until that point, Bilam was a Navi. At that point, he lost it and became a Kosim. So then in that case, how 40 years later is he saying Nevuah? Because Eivishter temporarily gave him back Nevuah in order to be able to say these brachas for the Jewish people, and in order to be able to give Nevuah about Mashiach and the devil. But basically, he started out as a Navi, and then not being able to be a Navi anymore, he decided to be a Kosim.
So when was the Kosim
case? So according to Rashi, it's when he decided to curse the Jewish people. At that point, he lost the status of a Navi. In fact, Rashi mentions on the
Pasuk. Before he cursed him or after?
Rashi just says when. So on the Pasuk, in Parshas Balak, Rashi says a little more definitively. After these three times, when he tried to curse the Jewish people and failed, when he says, V'ata hinini ho'lechlami, now I'm going back to my people.
Oh, no,
so Rashi says over there, meaning, from now on, I'm like any member of my people. I lost my Nevuah from now on, because Eivishter is angry at me for my attack.
Right.
So then he's used to having Nevuah, to having access to the higher to higher things beyond nature. So now if he can't do it through Nevuah, he's going to do it through Kosim, through magic. Amar Papa, Hainu Damri Inchi, this is like the expression people say. Misgoni Vashilti, you have a woman who used to be the wife of Sgoni, which means princes, Vashilti, and rulers. And instead, now Havoy Aizon Lagabri Nagri. Now she goes and is Mizana with people with Nagri. Rashi says two explanations. One is that Nagri means people whose job is to schlep barges using ropes, or the other one is it means carpenter. Either way, the point is a lower thing. Like he or she was the wife of princes and noblemen and whatever high ranking people, and like this now she's will now in order to just be with any man, since they're not available anymore, then she goes in the Mizana with the lower classes. So the same way Bilam, now that he can't have access to Nebuah anymore, he goes and does Koshim. Yeah. The Yad Ramah says a little differently. He says the Vorta is, he learns like Rashi's second explanation, that Nagar means carpenters. So he says the Vorta is, the Sgoni and the Shilti are rulers who use weapons. So she's used to being around people who know how to handle weapons. Well, if she can't find any because they're not available anymore, then she'll go with a carpenter where at least he uses metal tools that are somehow similar to weapons. And in the same way, like Bilam not having access to Nebuah anymore, he's going to Kosim, where he's going to black magic, which is sort of like a vessel. Yeah. Okay. Now, the pasuk continues about Bilam. Goni v'shilti, from being with princes and rulers, Havoy Aizen, she goes and is Mizana, Legavri Nagri, with people who are carpenters or barge holders. Okay. The pasuk continues, Hogu beneath the Machairah. Describing that they killed Bilam ben Ba'ur the Kosim, Bacherev, with the sword El Chalalehem, along with the other corpses. So what does that mean? Rashi says the point of the question that the Gemara asks is when it says Hogu El Chalalehem, they killed him along with the corpses, implies it was more than just Sam, they killed him with a sword. It implies they did something more than that.
After they were dead?
Well, that's what we have to figure out. The Yad Ramah says the question is, why doesn't it have to say Bnei Yisrael? Obviously, it's Bnei Yisrael killed him. Who else? So therefore, the Gemara Darshan says, Amar Rav Shkimu Boi Agam Mitzvah, Yilu Estrepa Herig Lechenech. It means they accomplished all four mitzvahs based in with him. So how do they do that? Rashi describes like this. They hanged him to do chenet. Okay. They lit a fire under him to do srefa. Then they chopped off his head. They did, and he chopped off his head, that's hereg. And his body fell down to the ground, which is skila, and got burnt in the fire, which is srefa. A few of the other mephoshim have a problem with that, among other things. The guy's already dead, so what good does it do? So the Yad Ramah talks about that maybe what they did is they timed it exactly, like they had one guy holding a rock and another guy holding, a couple of other guys holding a scarf to choke him, and another guy holding a sword, and another guy holding and they're like time it to do it all at the same time. And Marsha says maybe what they did is, for example, with hanging, they didn't hang him until he's dead. They hanged him just in order to partially choke him. And it was partially do chenek on him, and then they continued like partially killing him with a sword and partial straight, whatever, like this. And in the end, he got what he deserved, basically. Okay, Amaleahu min alav chanina. And by the way, this isn't the only person in history that says that all four misses were done on him. There's a story in Medrash Rabbah on Parshas Toldos that tells how there was a Yid, one of the Siavnim, actually a nephew of Yosef and Yehezer, a fellow named Yochim Ishtrodus, one of the Siavnim, but eventually, to make a long story short, the whole story in the Medrash over there, how he wound up doing Shuvah, and he wound up, he did the same thing. He did all four Mrs. Basin to himself, to be Mechaper on his Avedis. And the upshot is, the same thing as Rashi's describing over here. So it's set up a whole thing over here. So, and then the Medrash finishes off with Yosef and Yehezer was being executed by the Yevonim, by the Greeks at that point. He's about to be hanged. He sees Yochim in the Shoma flying to Gan Eden. He says, look at that. He got him to Gan Eden ahead of me. Okay. Anyway.
He was
originally one of the Siavnim, but he did Trova. He did Trova at the last minute. Okay. Amaleahu min alav chanina. Mishmi aloch Bilam bar kamahava. So this min asked your chanina, have you ever heard anything about how old Bilam was when he died? Amalei, so Rav Chanina says, Michtav Leksiv, there's nothing about it explicitly in the Pesukim. Ella, but, however, we can derive it as follows. Michtav, since it says in the Pesuk of Tillim, Anshe Domu Mirmalayachti, man, that men of blood and treachery are not going to live out half their days. A normal lifespan is 70 years, half of that would be 35. So it means Bilam cannot have lived to be 35. The most is, about Tlosin or Tlashin, about Tlosin Ba'arba, he must have been at most 33 or 34. Amalei, so the Min says, Shaka Kamrit, yeah, you know what you're saying? Well, you derived it from a pasuk, but me actually, the Didi Chazili Pinkasid to Bilam, I actually saw Bilam's notebook, the Havaksivbe, and it said in it, Bar Tlosin and Tlashin in Bilam Chagira, Bilam the lame, because we learned yesterday that Bilam was lame in one leg, was 33 years old, Kalkatriyase Pinchas Lista, when Pinchas the general killed him. So we see that
the
Pinchas from Moshe Rabbeinu's time. Now, the real question is, Rashi says, what about, we learned before, the Eibishter specifically said that when they go to war against Midian, they pick 1,000 people from each Shevet, and Pinchas is leading them in war. He's the, well, not the general per se, he's the Kohen Mashiach Mochamah. But he's a claim of Shrach Mocham. So Rashi actually says that even that still, no matter who it was, it may be some actual other person who killed Bilam, but nevertheless, because Pinchas was the head, therefore it's all called on his head. Yeah. Okay. So now Rashi asked the question, didn't we learn before we had the whole thing that Bilam was saying that that Yisra, you and I and Eo were all involved in the plot over there that Paray wanted to drown the Jewish babies? So then in that case, Bilam has to be a lot older than that. That was 80-odd years before they left Mitzrayim, plus another 40 years in the desert. So Rashi says that evidently Rav Chanina must disagree with that. He must disagree with that statement before, that Bilam was one of the three, because, no, well, Rav Chanina over here was saying that he was 33, has to necessarily disagree with what Rav Simoi says before. I mean, they talk about different possibilities, including we could be talking about a grandfather and a grandson, we could be talking about Gilgulim, whatever. So it's not necessarily, Rashi is saying, at least on a Pshat level, they contradict each other. Maybe though on a Jewish level, they don't necessarily. Okay. Only Marbre de Ravina Lebre. So Marbre de Ravina tells his son, regarding these seven individuals in history that the Or Mishnah had said on them, Ein Lechelik Lelem Abba, which is six of them are Jews and one of them is a goy, Bilam, b'chulu loy tapish. When it comes to all of them, when it comes to six out of the seven of them, don't loy tapish l'midrash. Don't look for a lot of midrash and don't look for a lot of things that you can darshan on them l'gnai. You have to find some, because that itself is kind of a kapara for them, but don't do more than necessary, because it shouldn't be more of a gnai to them than necessary. They're called Jews. Levarmi, all the ones mentioned in our Mishnah, Gechazi, except Bilam. Levarmi Bilam Arasha, except for Bilam Arasha, to Kama Damashkachas Bei Jereshbe. The more you can find about him to Darshan, for bad, go ahead and Darshan. Go ahead and Darshan on him.
The others not,
because they're called Jews. They fought have a nefesh alikis, and we learned before. Even we had a couple of days ago. We had the Dershir Shumas who brought a postif that said that the six Jews who were mentioned in our Mishnah all end up coming loyal and above. They didn't mention Bilam, but they had drushes for Yeravam and for Achav and for Manasseh and for Doeg and so forth. Yeah.
Doeg was a goy or you?
No, Doeg was a yid.
So
some of them. We're going to talk about Doeg now, actually. But now that you mention it, though, some of the Mephoshim learn that Doeg, he's called Doeg Adami. He may taka have been a ger from Edom. In fact, there's even a Rashi someplace in Sefer Shmuel that says he may have even been a ger from Amalek. At the beginning of Shmuel Beis, a guy comes and tells David about how Shaul died in battle over there, and David asks him afterwards, after he gives the whole report, who are you? And he says, I'm Ben Ish Ger Amaleki Anoichi, and Rashi brings over there from a Medrash that it was Doeg, that it may have been Doeg. Rashi says Rashi doesn't like that for that particular explanation, but whatever, he brings it. So that's one explanation. He's called Hadevi. His attacker was descended from Edrei. The other possibility, there's other possibilities. He may have lived in Edrei the same way as we find other Jews of that period who are called after the names of other nations. Doesn't mean they came from those nations, it means they lived in those nations. Like nowadays. Fine. Obviously, sometimes it does. Some of it biologically, you came from Moya. But the point is, the same way as nowadays, you might say, you know, this person is a New Yorker. He lives in New York, but he's a Yid who lives in New York. A Yid can just as well live in New York as in Yehovahsville or in Eretz Yisrael or whatever. By the same, a Yid is a Yid either way. There's an old expression I once read: if a person is born in a stable, it doesn't make him a horse. So by the same token, then yeah.
The
point is, whatever. And then there's other explanations as well. He's called Hot Jamie because he's bloodthirsty, as we saw with the whole thing with Noiv. Okay, hang on. But now we're going to start talking about it.
Okay.
In most of the psukim where it talks about Doeg, it spells it like that. Dalad Vav Aleph Gimel. So, okay, maybe one or two times it's spelled without the Vav, I'm not sure. Whatever. In at least one place, it says Doeg with a Yud. Dalad Vav Yud Gimel. What do you use? No, well, our Gemara spells it with two Yuds to make it clear that it's a Seir. In the Pasuk it's written Dalad Vav Yud Gimel. But why a Yud instead of an Aleph? Amrav Yechanan, the Tchila Yosef HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Doeg, because it represents the idea that originally the Eidosh is Tavyachol sitting there and worrying, Doeg, Meloshim worrying. Shema Yetzer Zeh, L'Tai B'Sra, what's going to happen if this person ends up going in a bad way? So therefore, Doeg is called most of the time, because the Eidosh is worried what's going to happen. Rabbi Heber mentions in Torah, maybe especially with Doeg, because as the Gemara is going to discuss later, he was an outstanding Talmud Chacham in the amount of knowledge he had. He had a hoicha neshama. He could have accomplished a lot, but so therefore, like, the Eibishter is more worried about him than the average person. La'acha shayotze, in the end, after he went in bad ways, Omar, the Eibishter says, vay shayotze zeh, woe that this one went out. So doyeg, with a yud, the middle letters of it are vav yud, representing that vay, representing that woe. The Yad Rama understands it slightly differently. Maybe he had a slightly different girsa over here, that originally the Eibishter is worried that such a person is going to be born in the first place. And the Yad Rama then goes into the famous question, how does the Eibishter have to worry about that if we know it's not decided in advance whether a person is going to be a tzaddik or a rasha? And the famous thing, the Eibishter knows, but he still gives us b'chir chofshit, the famous paradox that Rambam mentions. So at first, the Eibishter is worried that such a person is b'chlal going to be coming into the world, and eventually, once he came into the world and ended up taka being the rasha that he was, then the Eibishter says vay on it. Whoa. Okay, so now we're going to have a number of teachings, a number of statements from Rabbi Yitzchak about doyeg. Simen dibur v'rosha v'tzadik chayol v'soper. As usual, these are key words from each of the things that he's going to say. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, my dichtiv, what does it mean? In Kapitel Nun Beis of Tillim begins, Lamnaseach Maskel David, v'voy doyeg ha-doymi v'yagad l'shol, bo David ha-beis ha-chimelach. That David composed this capital when doyeg came and told Shol, David has come to the house of Achimelach, he and Achimelach are conspiring together against, Achimelach was the Kohen Gadol, and no. So he and Achimelach and David are conspiring against you, and David writes Kapitel Nun Beis to give it to Doyeg. Like, how can you do such a thing? So what does it mean? The pasuk begins over there. Matikal b'roh ha-giver. Why are you praising yourself with doing evil, you mighty person? On the face of it, it's double speaking, but the Gemara doesn't understand that Hashem is speaking to Doyeg. Chesed peo kol hayom. The chesed of Hashem is all day long. Meaning, Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Doyeg means the Eibishter says to Doyeg, Lo Gibur B'Torah Ata, aren't you a mighty person in Torah? So Matitau Amarah, why are you priding yourself, I'm evil, I'm speaking Lashon Hara about David? Lo Chesed Teo Notar Yalacha Kol Hayom, isn't the Chesed of Hashem, meaning the Torah Chesed Al Hashem, spread over you all day? In other words, you have the capability to be a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and you are, so why are you ruining it by saying Lashon Hara? V'amar Rabbi Yitzchak, also Rabbi Yitzchak says in a different kapitel, my dechtiv, two kapitel acharei and kapitel nun, v'lo rasha amar lekim malacha l'sapach chukai, to the rasha Hashem says, what business do you have telling over my mitzvah, my chukim? Meaning, this is again, amar l'akadosh baruch hu l'doyeg rasha, it means the Eibishter says to doyeg rasha, malacha l'sapach chukai, what business do you have, why are you bothering telling over my mitzvah? Pshat magil, a parashat meratzchim, a parashat mesapir l'shon hara, what do you do when you... Meaning, in other words, Kshat Magil, a Parshas Meratzim, a Parshas Mesapir Lashon Hara. When you're learning Torah and you come across the places in Torah where it talks about murderers and people who say Lashon Hara and how bad they are and their punishment and whatever, and you do both, you killed Noiv, your Retzeach, and he said Lashon Hara about David. Martha Dorish Behem, what are you dashing in them? So therefore, in other words,
those are two contradictory steps. On the one hand, the Avish just said, you're a tremendous Talmid Chacham, why are you doing
it? You have the ability to be a tremendous Talmid Chacham, so why are you ruining it with Lashon Hara?
Right.
Now the Avish is saying, but the
Yahweh reversed. Why do you occupy yourself in Torah to such a Rasha?
Meaning, in other words, what do you think? How are you reconciling these things that you're doing, that you're being a Rasha and yet learning Torah? So then you should, in other words, you should realize that you can't have it both ways. You should realize that I can't learn Torah, I can't learn the Parshas Meratzchim and be a Retzeach myself. I can't learn Parshas Mesapir Lashon Hara and be a Baal Lashon Hara myself. I got to do something about it. I got to fix myself up.
But we needed one statement to suggest.
Okay, so we have two different things. One saying...
You seem to be saying you cannot do evil and learn Torah. You
so
have
I guess it means both. Alderach, like Aliyo says on Harakamo, I'm not at the place come up there, I'll stay at the Ibim. How long are you going to be jumping back and forth between two over the fence? Between two worlds, between Hashem and Baal. So yeah, effectively, then he's saying, fine, you want to be a Baal Lashon Hara, and I'm going to say, then don't bother learning Torah, because it's not doing you any good anyway. You want to learn Torah, you want to be a Talmid Chacham, then get rid of the Lashon Hara and the Ritzicha, yeah. That same pasuk in Kapitel Nun continues, Vatisa Brisi Alepicha, you carried my bris, my covenant, on your mouth. So on your mouth implies that it was superficial, only in his mouth, not his heart. Amar Ami, Ein Torah Soshal Doeg El Misof of Halachot. It means Taka Doeg's Torah was only from the mouth outward. It was only superficial. That's right. That Groida is a throat. But here the point is, and it was Alepicha as opposed to it wasn't belay. It wasn't in his heart. And Marsha says, actually, it means more than that. Alepicha, in addition, means even when it came to the speaking of it, a person usually speaks. It involves their lungs, it involves their throat or whatever. By Doeg, it only involved his lips. He just moved, when he was learning, he just moved his lips like that without actually using any breath from his lungs or whatever. So therefore, it was even more superficial, and therefore that kind of learning Torah doesn't protect a person. It doesn't protect a person from succumbing to his Yetzer Hara. The Gemara actually mentions in Eruvin, the Gemara mentions the idea that the Torah has to be b'chol ramach evora, but has to involve the entire body and then mishtameres, and if not, ain mishtameres. So this fits with that also, that if he was just moving his lips and not actually using any other part of his body.
Involving the entire body learning Torah?
Yeah, well, it means also this is where part well, it includes mitzvahs as well, but even in learning Torah, in other words, that it has to involve the person's body, that's the idea behind shuckling is part of that. The idea of saying, of Taka saying the learning b'koil, as opposed to, like we're saying over here, just moving your lips, yeah. What does it mean? Going back to Kapitel Nunbeis, the Yirut Tzadikim V'Yiro, the Pasuk continues over there describing after Doeg gets punished, the Tzadikim will see and they will fear, but all of Yitzchaku, and then they will laugh at him. You don't fear and you don't laugh at the same time. But Chile Yiro L'Osef Yitzchaku means first they were afraid and then afterwards they laughed. Afterwards they were happy. Why? So Rashi says that Tzadikim were afraid people might learn from Doeg's ways. You see, he's being so successful, so people might learn that it's okay to be a Rasha like that. In the end, when they see that he gets his deserved punishment, then they're happy that nobody's going to learn like that. And again, there's a lot of different explanations among the Poroshim. They're afraid that
that he wouldn't be punished.
Sometimes the Eibishter is Erech HaPayim. We know a lot of times now you have a Rashi more successful in this world, right? And especially the Tzadikim may have had extra reason to be concerned over here because he's not just any garden variety Rasha. He's a great Talmud Chacham. So therefore, people might tack and mistakenly think that you can be that you can be a Talmud Chacham and yet be a Mushkas as well. So therefore, they're afraid of that. And afterwards, they're afraid also that the idea that Rishoyim are going to dominate the Tzadikim and various other things that they have reason to be concerned about. So then, when he got his punishment, then they can be happy that now the Eibishter has shown the Eibishter has shown people a lesson what to do and what not to do.
In a way, it's better to be a Rasha without Torah because it does confuse people.
There is that, yeah. And also because eventually the person may realize that I need Torah and do Tshuva.
Well,
on the other hand, there is on the flip side of it, though, the Gemara mentions in some places that the light in learning Torah will bring a person back to the right way. So it really depends. Part of it also depends. You know, we mentioned yesterday, the Gemara mentioned the idea of learning Torah l'shma, doing mitzvahs l'shma versus shaloi l'shma. Tosfos in a few places draws a distinction between different kinds of l'shma and shaloi l'shma. Different kinds of shaloi l'shma, rather. There's shaloi l'shma because it's interesting or whatever, and then there's shaloi l'shma. So that's not such a bad l'shma in and of itself, because that at least eventually the person will come l'shma.
Right.
On the other hand, then there's l'shma. Tosfos talks about l'kanter, like you use it as a weapon against other people, which is what Doeg did.
Right.
So therefore, that's a whole different kind of thing. That's it. Well, I'm going to be tough. My
it's done today.
What?
Tremendous Talmid Chachamim using Torah against other people.
I don't know. Tremendous Talmid Chachamim, but yeah, you have people who misuse Torah like that to make themselves greater or whatever.
You make yourself greater.
Yeah, that's the first kind of Shema, to put down other people. Yeah, unfortunately, such things happen. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to be tough. My defective. Now we're going to deal with the positive. He swallows a fortune. Chayo means like a huge fortune, like rabbit bonus of the foil. Vayikienu, but then he throws it up. Mibitno yerushenu kale. From his stomach, Hashem will empty him out. So what does that mean? Amar David l'knei Hakadosh Baruch Hu means that David says to Eishu Rebbeinu Shalom, Yomus Doeg. Doeg ought to die for all of his affairs. So the Eibishter says, okay, chayo bala vayikienu. Fine, but he has swallowed a lot of Torah. He is a great Talmud Chacham. So vayikienu, we'll have to wait until he throws it up in the sense that he forgets it.
Didn't we learn we're not supposed to govern for someone's death?
Yeah, we talked about yesterday. So actually, again, we talked about what the Be'er Sheva says, that to daven for them, fine, we do that all the time.
Right.
But to force the issue by using like the time of the Eibishter's anger every day, that not. But fine. Here David is just davening for it in the regular way. Yeah. And besides which, also, Rabbi Heber has a long discussion in Kol Yisrael. In the next couple of lines, of the Abdullah taking a really hard line about Doyed. He should die. He shouldn't come into Olam Haba. He shouldn't have nothing. I mean, okay, I can understand. Fine, David suffered a lot from Doeg, but fine, is that what you do? What happened to Nakama? What happened to Yetira? Whatever. He makes the point over there. He makes the point that we find from the various things that Doeg did against David, he was trying to prevent Malchus-based David from coming into being in the first place. He's the first one to bring up the question, is David really legitimate because he's descended from Rusa Mayavia? He was the first one who brought it up after David killed Goliath, yes. He's the one we learned earlier in the Perek. He's the one who's trying to get Shaul jealous at David. He's the one now who killed Novi Akonim, et cetera, so like, if it had been up to him, there wouldn't be Malchus based David and there wouldn't be Mashiach. Therefore, David is taking a very hard line with him. It's not just any kind of garden variety of issues. It strikes at the nerve center of the whole Jewish people. So the Eibishter
said. Did that by jealousy?
So it's by lashon hara and jealousy. So the Eibishter says to him, chayo bola. Okay, but he swallowed. He's absorbed a lot of Torah, a wealth of Torah, by Ikienu. So we'll have to wait until he throws it up. In other words, in the sense, until he forgets his Torah, and then his Torah won't protect him anymore. And then fine. Amalafano, so the David says that, don't wait that long. Bibitno Yerushenu Keil, from his stomach, let the Eibishter empty him out. In other words, you hurry things along and make him forget it sooner than he otherwise naturally would. Like this, he could live until old age and then forget it because he gets Alzheimer's or whatever. Like this, make it happen faster.
Why did he want that?
Again, for the reason that we just said before, he wanted Doeg out of the way as fast as possible. A matter of fact, we're going to have later down on the Amud, actually, we're going to have the point the Gemara is going to mention that Doeg and Achitofel, one of David's other great enemies, were not contemporaries. Doeg died before Achitofel was born. So one idea was, and Marshall says over there, the reason why the Gemara feels the need to point that out is because it was a chesed to David. If Doeg and Achitofel were in the world at the same time, he might not have been able to withstand them. So therefore, David is interested in having Doeg out of the picture as soon as possible, so he's not...
Why did the Eibishter do such a thing, to put such a big enemy against David?
First of all, Doeg had the Bechira Chavshit. Doeg had the Bechira Chavshit. So then, Yid has the Bechira Chavshit. The Eibishter doesn't choose what he's going to do. But aside from that, you have a lot of times. Besides that, also you have a lot of times in Jewish history. Everything worthwhile. There has to be something opposed. There's counterbalance. Zelo Masel Selekim. If there's going to be the Nachash and Gan Eden, then there has to be Doeg against David. It's interesting, actually, now that you mention it, there's actually Sfarim that talk about it someplace. I don't remember where this comes from. That the Doeg and David are actually the same gematria, representing that they really are counterbalanced to each other. Yeah, 14. Matter of fact, actually, it's brought. I don't remember the marker of this. That for this reason, in Divrei Yomim, which Divrei Yomim is mainly written for the covered of David HaMelech and his dynasty, every time it mentions him over there, instead it spells it David Dalad Vav Yud Dalad with an extra Yud. So it's not the same gematria as Doeg, and also to represent the 24 mishmaris of Koyanim and the 24 mishmaris of Leviim that he set up. The schus that he had, but also to differentiate him from Doeg. Yeah. Okay. I don't remember. I lived it a long time ago. I don't remember where it was. Okay. My dichtiv, yet another pasuk that it says in Kapitel Nunbeis over there, the Kapitel about Doeg. Gam keo yitotzcho lanesach, lanesach. So the whole pasuk goes like this. Gam keo yitotzcho lanesach, lanesach. The Eibishter will tear you down forever. Yachtecho, he will frighten you. And he'll break you. He'll uproot you from the tent. To remove you from the tent. And he'll uproot you from the land of life forever. So what are these three parts of the pasuk mean? The various parts of the pasuk. Gam keil yitotzcho nesach. When it starts off by saying the Eibishter will uproot you forever, will destroy you forever, tear you down forever, means Amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu David makes Doeg la'amad asi. Means the Eibishter proposes to David, after all, Doeg has died, let him at least come into Olam Haba. Amar lachono, but no, David says gam keil yitotzcho nesach. No, the Eibishter should tear you down forever.
In other words,
nesach meaning Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. And my dichtiv yachtecha v'isachachama. What does it mean? The pasuk continues. He will break you and remove you from the tent. V'shereshcha me'eretz chaim sela and uproot you from the land of the living forever. It means Omer Hakadosh Baruch Hu. So the Eibishter said, fine. He may not have a place in Olam Haba. At least let Doeg have the schus that they will say teachings of Torah over in his name in the Bis Medrash. Meoihol, meaning the tents of Torah. No, David says. No, David says to the Eibishter, no, Yachtecha v'yitzachachem ha'ol. No, that instead let the Eibishter break him and remove him from the tent. That his name shouldn't even be mentioned, anything that he taught in the, should not be mentioned in the tents of Torah. He taught halacha. See, the Gemara is going to say in a second. Remember, he was a great Talmid Chacham. So. And what about Levul Ibn Rabbanon? So, okay, the Eibishter proposes, okay, at least let him have children or descendants who will be Chachamim. No, David says, I don't even want that. Let him be uprooted from the land of the living forever. Uprooted, meaning, in other words, that even his roots shouldn't produce any new
descendants.
In other words, yeah. And again, David has his reasons for being so implacably opposed to David. We did learn the other day, though, in the Dorsha of the Shulmas, that after all, according to the Drasha that we said over there, that the Edishta after all says, you know what, I will take responsibility for reconciling David with David and Akhetar. And that way, in other words, that David and Akhetar, according to that, can actually have a Chayyot Lo Lama Ba after this.
But not in this world.
Right. Well, he was dead already, yeah.
No, but I mean, yeah. His descendants.
Right. Well, maybe, I don't know.
He doesn't have descendants?
I don't know if he has descendants. I have no idea. Okay. But Amar Rav Yitzchak, my dichtiv, what does it mean? Apostle, this is now apostle in Yeshaya. Aye sofer, where is the counter? This word sofer, of course, has a double meaning. It can mean a writer and it can mean a counter. Aye shokel, where is the one who weighs? Aye sofer is something golem. Where is the one who counts the towers? So in context, the pasuk is talking about like where are all the high government officials, like the ones who count the towers to determine how well fortified the city is. But what it means, aye sofer, where are the sofer, means kol osiyas shebat Torah. It means where are the great Talmid Chachamim who are able to count all the letters in the Torah, who are expert in chaseiras v'yaseiras. Right? And we Taka don't have that. Already in the time of the Gemara, in Kedushin, the Gemara mentions that we're not baki in chaseiras v'yaseiras. We're not always baki in which word. You said when a word is written with or without a yod or a vav, when a word is written, sometimes, yeah, but a word, let's say, in the Torah, like avesecha, for example, sometimes it's spelled with the vav after the vase, sometimes not. That's chaser and mole, respectively.
We write
our Sefer Torah, but Lamaisa, first of all, for example, the Teimoni Masorah actually has is like nine differences between that and Ashkenazic and Sephardic Sefer Torah, and a few of them are things of Mole and Chaser. Okay, let's say, for example, in one of the Parshas Bereishis, for example, Gadol Avoni Minisoi, I think our Sefer Torah have it Minisoi with a Vav, and the Teimoni ones have it without the Vav, or maybe the other way around, I don't remember. There's a few words like that, and the Gemara mentions that b'chol, we don't have a b'kiris in it, which comes up in halacha. If you're reading the Torah, and if you're reading the Torah on Shabbos, and you find a mistake in chaseiras v'yaseiras, the din is, as long as it doesn't change the pronunciation of the meaning, you taka don't take out another sefer Torah, because who is to say the other one is going to be the more accurate one? After Shabbos, yeah, you should fix it. So like this, to be able to count the letters of the Torah and know exactly where all the chaseiras and all the yaseiras are, is a big milah. So where are such people?
So he was baki in that?
So that's where, once, in other words, the Gemara's understanding, the Gemara's understanding that Doyeg was that kind of caliber of Talmid Chacham, yeah? Aye Shoykel, when it continues, who's the one, where's the one who weighs? Shoykel kol kalim b'chamurim sheba Torah. Means that he was able to weigh all the kalvachomers in the Torah. Rashi says it just means to darshan kalvachomers. Marshall says the reason why we talk about it as weighing is because we know throughout Shas you have sometimes there's a kalvachomer one way, but on the other hand you could argue the kalvachomer a different way, so you need to weigh the pros and cons of each one to come to a conclusion, and he was an expert at that. And what's Aye Sofer some of them? Where are the ones who count the towers? Shahiyah Sofer Shloish Meir Halachas Pesukas Migdal Apereach Ba'Adar. He was able to enumerate 300 established halachas regarding a Migdal HaPereach Ba'Adar. Now, one second. What is a Migdal HaPereach Ba'Adar? Literally, it means a tower that's flying in the air. So what does that mean? So we have many, many different explanations. Rashi himself over here brings four different explanations. One is that these are halachas, or drushes, about why is it that the top little mark, the top little tag on top of a lamed, which is that's represented by Migdal, because it sticks up above the other letters, why does it bend a little downwards? So it's like Migdal, it's like the tower that's flying in the air there on top of the lamed, why is it shaped the way it is?
It's bent a bit, yeah.
So why is that? That's Rashi's first explanation. Then the second explanation is Migdal Apereach Ba'Aver. Migdal, according to this, can mean sometimes in Shas, Migdal, for example, in Shlosha Tristan Hain, for example, in the Mishnayos, we learn for a yard site. A Migdal there doesn't mean a tower. It means a chest of drawers or something, like a wardrobe or something. So therefore, migdala perech ba'avir can be, for example, if a person goes inside a container like that, like a wardrobe, and they carry him into Eretz Amim, which is tamei midrabanan, does he become tamei or not? So Doeg was able
inside
if you take a person and put him inside a wooden box,
right,
which is closed,
yeah,
and then carry him into Eretz Amim, does he become tamei or not? So according to that second explanation, that's a migdala perech ba'avir. It's a migdala, a tower, or rather a chest of drawers or whatever, hello, that's flying in the air, in other words, it's being carried through the air. Does the person inside it become tamei or not? That's the second explanation of migdala perech ba'avir.
Yeah, the Moshe today.
That he knew 300 halachas in that connection.
Yeah.
Hold on, I'll tell you about. Hold on, I'll tell you. Hello, everyone. I'll tell you about planes in a minute. Just a minute. Rashi's third explanation is migdala perech ba'avir has to do with kishuf, that he knew 300 halachas. That he knew 300 halachas regarding the way that kishuf can be used to make a tower be suspended or a chest of drawers, whatever, be suspended in the air. And then Rashi brings the fourth explanation is that it's not migdala pereach ba'aver, but migdala oimid ba'aver. Where ba'aver over here doesn't mean flying in the air, it means that it's standing out in the open air, not under a roof. And you have, in the Sefer Olos, there are a number of dinim that have to do with a case like that where you have a wardrobe like that or a, whatever, a wooden container standing outdoors, and you have various dinim about whether something, when something in it is tameh, when something in it is not tameh, when it constitutes an oil, when it doesn't. So those are four different explanations of what migdala perech ba'avir are. So he knew 300 halachas regarding any one of these four things. And then you have a lot of other explanations as well, including that the Rabbi Goin talks about, and the Rashba elaborates a little bit, that migdala perech ba'avir, yes, can mean like it's done with kishuf, like Rashi is describing, or it can be done with magnets, as we're going to talk about on Kuf Zayin Amud Beis, we'll talk about tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.
Magnets,
yeah, you can have it with magnets. Something can be suspended in the air where it looks like it's, yeah, with powerful enough magnets. Yeah, the Gemara is going to talk about tomorrow that Gehazi did that to the Egel to one of Yeravam's Egel Hazav, and therefore misled people into thinking that it's a true thing to worship. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, they have magnets nowadays. Sure, they can suspend things. And now you mentioned airplanes, Rabbi Yaakov. So actually, the Ben Yehoyada says maybe that's another explanation of migdala perech ba'avir. Maybe it means they knew halachas regarding if a person is flying in an airplane. And you have adayemazeh. You have halachas that are relevant to that. As a kohen flying in an airplane over a Beis HaKvaros, does he become tameh, for example? Which is a real thing nowadays when you have flight paths that go over that go over cemeteries,
okay,
and all kinds of other dinim that can be negeya if a person is flying in it. Yeah, but there, you have a concept the Gemara discusses in various places that oil zoruk, that a moving oil, is not necessarily considered an oil. So not necessarily does it constitute a chafitza from the kavaris.
What about the kibbutz 20 amos?
Doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. That's only as far as Eruvin and Ner Chanukah and Sukkah. Oil zoruk, a moving oil. Moving oil. So whatever, there are complicated.
Can go up to space.
Yeah. The Kasper, yeah. So you have there are halachas. There are achronim who dealt with the halachas on these things. I remember a few years back there was something in the news that there were koyanim when El Al planes were flying in and out of Tel Aviv and they were flying over a nearby cemetery, they put themselves in like these big body bags or something to.
They put
body bags. Okay, yeah. Well, but that's fine. In that case, no, because then then you have the floor of the plane between you and the cargo, and it's fixed between you and there. So that's not an oil zoruk. The question
on the ground is also a separation with the plane.
How? No, because the plane itself is moving. All right, whatever. The point is there are a lot of halachas, and the point is, so Ben Yehoyada says maybe that's what the Gemara means over here, that they knew all these halachas, that Doeg knew and Achitofel knew all these halachas regarding traveling in airplanes. Migdala perech ba'avir. Okay, then one more is Marashal says Migdala Perech Ba'avir represents the Beis HaMikdash. It's a Migdal, or Beis HaMikdash is like a tower. It was Perech Ba'avir because at that point in history, nobody knew for sure where it's going to be. It doesn't spell out in the Torah. The Torah always says, Amokom Asher Yivchar Hashem. It doesn't spell out exactly where it's going to be. Eventually, the Gemara tells us, the first Beis HaMikdash? Yeah, the Beis HaMikdash, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, before the Beis HaMikdash was built. So the Gemara tells us in Zvachim that eventually Shmuel and David one time sat down and researched it and figured out that it's going to be on Har HaMoriah. But so therefore, the Vorkid, Shmuel HaNavi and David, yeah. So therefore, the point was, they figured it out based on Sukkim in Yeshua. We'll learn about it in Zvachim and later this year, Beis Hashem. But in the summertime. But yeah. But anyway, the point is, according to that explanation, it means that Doeg and Achitofel knew halachas that are relevant to this, but they couldn't figure out, as the Gemara is going to say soon, they weren't able to come out a little bit to Hilchaza what the bottom line is. Where Taka is, the Beis Mikdash was right now is flying in the air, as in nobody knows for sure where it's going to be. Where is it actually going to land? Where is it actually going to be built? That's the third Beis Mikdash. That's, we're talking about the first Beis Mikdash. Yeah, okay. Right. Yeah, okay. All right. Omer Rav, or Omer Ravami, Arba Meir Bo Doeg V'Achitofel Migdal HaPareach V'Aver. Doeg and Achitofel were able to ask 400 questions about this Migdal HaPareach V'Aver business. In other words, we're saying that they knew 300 halachos in it, but in addition, they had 400 questions about it. V'lo Ifshet Lohuchad, and those that they couldn't figure out the answer to even one of those 400 questions. They were obviously very good questions. Omer Rava, but Rava says, Rabusel Migdal Boi. So what? Is it such a great thing to be able to ask questions? Let me give you an example that just being able to ask questions is not so good. To be able to find answers to the questions, that's the rebusa, that's the big thing. For example, b'shnei de Rabbi Yehuda, we know that during the times of Rabbi Yehuda, kula tanuya b'nizikin, all of their learning was in seder nizikin. They focused mainly on seder nizikin. V'anan kamasnina tuva b'uktzin. Whereas we, in our time, Rava is saying, we learn a lot in even Masechta Uktzin, which is the last Masechta of Shas, and which deals with kind of like a, sort of almost like a side thing in Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara, that Rambam says, in fact, that's why it's placed last. Uktzin basically talks about dinim of stems of food. You have a concept in halacha, we'll learn about it in Chulin next year, Bez Hashem, or a year and a half from now or so, Bez Hashem, that there's a concept in halacha called yodos, that you have, for example, let's say an apple has a stem. If something tomei touches the stem, it'll make the apple tomei. And if the apple, the stem, the thing that sticks up in the top of the apple. Yeah. So, yeah, today, sometimes, but not always. When you go to the grocery and buy apples, sometimes they have the stems attached. Same idea, but whatever. The point is, such things are considered yodos. And you have, we learned from Sukkim, that a yad is considered an extension of the food. So Masechta Uktzin deals with basically with the issue of when is a stem or whatever considered a yad and when not. There's a certain maximum size beyond which it's not considered a yad. There's what condition it's in. There's various considerations. Anyway, so Rava is saying, so we don't just focus on Nizikin. We focus even on Uktzin, which is a very obscure area of halacha, kind of. Kind of lacks Masechta and Shas. And V'chihavim Motzi Rabbi Yehuda, and when Rabbi Yehuda, who again we're saying would mainly focus on Nizikin, so when he would come to something in connection with dinim and uktzin, for example, a Mishnah, which is actually not an uktzin, it's actually in Taris, but isha shekeveshes yerech b'kdeira, you have a case over there of a woman who is pickling vegetables in a pot. You have a case over there in the Mishnah where leaves of it are sticking out of the pot and she touches the leaves. Are they metame the rest of the food or not? And you have a few different approaches among the Mephoshim what the question is exactly. That the again, is it a question of yad, that are the leaves considered a yad for the food inside the pot, or is it an issue of the leaves maybe like partly inside the pot, partly outside, maybe only the pot part outside the pot becomes tameh and the part inside not, whatever. Or the Amri law, or some say that when Rabbi Yehuda would reach a different Mishnah, which Taka is in Uktzin, Zeisim Shekovshan B'Tarpei and Dahurin. You have a case over there with olives that you pickled them together with their leaves, tahurin. So we say the leaves are tahur. In other words, they're not makabel truma. The leaves are not considered a yad for the olives because the Mishnah says over there they're only pickled along with the olives to make it look nice. They're not used to lift out the olive or whatever, which is the purpose of a yad would be to lift it out, like to hold aside. So it's not considered a yad in that case. It's pickled together. Anyway, when Rabbi Yehuda would learn such Mishnayos, Omar, he would say, Havayas, the Rav Shmuel, Kachazina Hacha. I see over here difficult discussions of Rav and Shmuel. Like he couldn't understand what the reasoning behind these Mishnayos are. Why Taka should it be that the leaves of the olives shouldn't be considered a yad? Why should it be that the leaf that's half inside or half outside the pot or whatever doesn't transmit too much to the pot? Ba'anan, and Rava says, yet in our time, two generations later, Kamasninan, B'uktsin, Swastre, Mesivta. We, in our time, we learn just in Uktsin alone, we learn 13 Masivta, meaning Rashi says we have 13 different yeshivas that are all Oisik and Masechta Uktzin, so we know it inside and out. So in the sense of to know, to so like this, Rabbi Huda is able to ask questions in Ochsin. We're able to answer them, which is a greater thing. So what are you saying? That asking questions, what are you saying? That Doeg and Achitofel, being able to ask 400 questions on Migdal HaPareach Ba'Avar is such a big thing. To be able to answer the questions is much more important than to be able to ask them.
But wait a minute. How can you answer the question if you don't ask them?
Fine, you have to ask the question. But then the point is, don't leave it unanswered. The fact that we're saying that Doeg and Achitofel had these 400 questions and they couldn't resolve any of them, Rava is arguing that doesn't mean much. The same. It's harder to answer, yeah. And on the other hand, Rava continues, on the other hand, you have to realize that just knowing Torah by itself is not really enough, because even though it's true as far as knowledge of Torah, we're greater than Rabbi Huda, because Rabbi Huda focused mainly on the Zikin, and he had a hard time with Uchtzin or other parts of the sector of Seder Taharis, whereas we are familiar with them inside and out. Yet, Rabbi Yehuda showed us in the Sunni of Offer Mitzvah. Yet when Rabbi Yehuda, when it came, when they needed to fast, when they needed to daven for rain, Rabbi Yehuda could just take off his shoes in preparation for a fast, and rain would start coming. But Anan, whereas we, Rava says, in our time, Sabchinan, we scream out to Edisha, but like the match was on, and nobody was paying attention to us. So in other words, even though our knowledge of Torah is greater, because that's on a kind of sibyl, you do like on Tisha B'Av, you don't wear leather shoes. So, yeah. So we know a lot more Torah than Rabbi Yehuda. So even though we're able to answer, so in other words, it's not enough just to ask, it's not even enough to answer. Ela HaKadosh Baruch Hu Libavoi, the answer must be the Eibush desires the heart. It's not just enough that you know a lot of Torah, it has to be that your heart is in it. So therefore, we are on a lower level than Rabbi Yehuda's time, therefore we're gathering for rain and we're not answered unlike Rabbi Yehuda. By the same token, the fact that Doeg and Achitofel knew a lot of questions, even that they knew a lot of halachas or whatever, big deal, if their heart wasn't in it, it was not soft of a halachot, like we said before, it was just superficial. And by the way, you know, the Chizal makes the point, and other Achronim make the point, when you say over here, Achmona Liba Boi, does not mean, does not mean, as people sometimes think, that I can be a good Jew in my heart, and that's it. You have the famous joke they say about that, this is why there's a lot of heart disease among Jews, because you put too much burden on the heart. You put all your Yiddishkeit is on the heart. No, mitzvahs ma'aseyos are important, but the point is the mitzvahs ma'aseyos have to be with lev behind them. The Chiddush says something like that, yeah.
He just said you have to put it on your heart.
But not only on your heart is the point. Don't think. Okay, the Pasuk says b'chol levavcha, but the point is don't say I'm a good Jew in my heart, I mean well, and I believe in the Eibush in my heart, but mitzvahs ma'aseyos are important. No, that's the point.
When
you have a Gemara like this that says HaKadosh Baruch Hu Liba Boi, you could... Yeah, no, you need both, of course, but you could miss
it. You know, it's only in my brain.
Yeah, yeah,
not in my
understood.
Heart.
Of course. Well, that's what we said the other day. We talked about Yerovam, that he thought that you could go with just brain and yeah.
It was a Maftu.
Yeah. Yeah. Yerovam. That's what we said over there. We talked over there about Rabbi Heber brings in Kol Yisrael, that Yerovam, where we have the famous story over there where the Eibush tells Yerovam, you and I and David will walk together in Gan Eden if you do tshuva. And he says, but David mi beroish, David's going to go first, so then I'm not interested, because David represents the heart. David represents Kabbalah soil. Yerovam represents Moshe, and he was a brilliant Tanakh Chacham. He doesn't want to subjugate Moshe to the Moyach to Kabbalah soil, and therefore that's it.
Isn't that a bit of a Chabad the same?
Yeah, that's Chabad, that's Moyach Shalat Alalev, but on the other hand, the point is your Moyach itself has to be subjugated to Kabbalah soil. And then Yerovam wasn't willing to do it.
It
includes Avodah Salev, it includes that you have Ava and Yira in your heart. Yeah? Okay. Alright, Omer of Misharshia. Doeg v'Achitofel lahavu Sabri Shmaita. Rav Misharshia says Doeg and Achitofel did not know how to learn. They did not know how to explain a halacha properly. Maski for Mazutra, what do you mean? Yeah, that's a question. Maski for Mazutra, Mandachti. When we talk about that they lost their place in Hamra, that's also a shtickle loss in Hamra,
but the verse is actually all this that we talk about. We said before, the Gemara said before, you weren't here, that we said, Taki, you shouldn't minimize the amount that you talk about them, but still, you have to talk about them
to learn not to be like them, and that kind of thing itself is a kapara for them. That kind of bizoyan that we sit over here in a Bes Medrash and we learn about the rishos and whatever, that itself is a kapara for them. Okay, so he says, Doeg and Achitofel did not know how to learn properly. What do you mean? We just said they were tremendous Talmid Chachamim. They knew how to count all the letters and all the Kseiros and Yiseiros in the Torah. They knew how to weigh Kal v'Chomers. They knew how to do all these dinim of Megdal Aperech v'Aver v'Ap Amrit Lehavu Sabri Shmaita. And you say they didn't know how to understand Halacha? Ela, no. What you must mean is, they have a Salkul Shmaita, Alibud Hilchasa. What you must mean is, yeah, they knew how to learn. They didn't know how to come to a conclusion according to Halacha. As it says, the secret of Hashem is for those who fear. Meaning, there's the ability to learn, and then there's the ability to come up with Alibud Hilchasa, which we learned before, by the way. We had in the whole discussion about the six milos of David, the last one we said was Hashem Imo, Shalach Kamosi B'chomachim, and Shaul got jealous of David for that because he didn't have that ability. To have that you're able to come to a conclusion al pi halacha requires special siyata d'shmaya. Yeah, because halacha is a tag of a kid's special term. Igeres Chavtes in Tanya is all about that halacha is a tag of a kid's special term. Yeah. Yeah, that too. So the point
cannot come to the
practical, to be able to come to the practical thing.
The practical
that requires
whatever he says in halacha was like David.
Yeah. That's what we said before. So therefore, the point is, Doeg and Achitofel did not have that siyata d'shmaya because they were not Yireyav, they weren't Yerushamayim. Therefore, sure, they could pilpul zich and halacha and whatever, but to come to a conclusion that would be valid according to halacha, that they weren't able to.
That's a tremendous chazaron.
But, yeah, that's what we're saying. That was their chazaron for not being Yireyav.
So that's why he says that they did not have...
But that when he says, lo yhavu sabu shmaita, it doesn't mean they didn't know how to learn, it means they didn't know how to come to a conclusion that would be correct off the halacha.
What did he base himself on?
He bases himself on Soda Hashem Lireya.
No, I understood, but how does he know that?
So that's how he knows. That's how he knows. He had the Kabbalah from his Rebbe. I know. Okay.
Since they were not Yerushalayim.
Since they weren't Yerushalayim. They didn't have that Siyata D'Shmaya. And we had, that's what we said before, that Doeg was jealous of David, that he had that ability and he did. That's why he spoke Lashon Hara about David in the first place.
David was a Yerushalayim.
And Doeg was not, but he didn't take it because I'm not a Yerushalayim. If he did, he would have done Shuvah. He did. He took it because I'm jealous of him. He has that ability and I don't. Okay. We said before that the Eibishter is saying, fine, eventually Doeg will forget his learning, and then I can remove him from the world. And David says, don't wait till that happens naturally, make it happen ahead of time. Sure enough, Doeg did not die until he forgot his learning. Chenema, as the pasuk says, who yomus the ein muser.
So the Eibishter doesn't listen to
David. Yeah, so he did. The Eibishter caused that ahead of time. Remember, we said before. The Gemara is going to say soon that Doeg only lived to 34 years old.
Right.
So, like, under natural things, he would have remembered his Torah for a lot longer. He would have lived to 70, 80 and then gotten Alzheimer's or whatever like this. The pasuk says about a Rasha, he will die with a lack of Musar, meaning a lack of Torah, over Roivi Valter Yishke, and with his great foolishness, he'll go wrong. He forgot his Torah, and therefore at that point he died. Yes, and the Medrash, there's actually a Medrash that expands on what happened before Doeg died. But he's busy teaching his Talmidim Torah, and all of a sudden he's forgetting more and more as he's teaching. He's forgetting more and more, and it's eventually becoming a jumble. And they finally removed him from the Bis Medrash. I guess that fits with the second half of the Yishke, that he goes that he becomes foolish. Yeah.
Who said that?
At the Medrash, I don't remember where. Rav Ashi Omer Nitzara, Ashi Rav, I guess Omer Nitzara. He says that actually Doeg was punished with tzaras for his Lashon Hara. Shenema, Hitzmata Kol Zonim Imeka, as we find a pasuk in Tillim that says you have Hitzmata. The simple meaning of Hitzmata is you cut off. Kol Zonim Imeka, everybody who strays from you. So what does the word hitzmata mean? Ksiv hasam latzmitzus. Now, you have a pasuk in Parashat Bahar that uses the word latzmitzus, which is from the same shoresh, um etagumin and lachalutin. The Aramaic translation of latzmitzus is lachalutin, meaning permanent. The context of it is you're not allowed to sell land and everything to it permanently. Utnan, and we know the word chalutin has to do with taras. Ein ben muskur mochlot, el prior prima. The only difference between a matzor muskur, matzor is quarantined temporarily until we figure out what's the story with the taras, and a matzor mochlot, one who's determined to be a full-fledged matzor, the difference between them is prior prima, that's only a matzor mochlot after the hair is clothed, after letting hair grow long, only a matzor mochlot after the hair is clothed. So we see that the word mochlot, prima is tearing his clothes, prior is growing his hair long. Not cutting his hair. So we see, therefore, the word, the shodash ches lamed tes, cholat, is associated with a matzorah muklat. Therefore, lachalutin, which is the translation of smithus, is also associated with tzaraas. And therefore, when it says he's smata, kol zonim imeka, that the Eibishter, you cut off everybody who strays from you, means that he got tzaraas. And the reason he got tzaraas is, again, because of the Lashon Hara.
Maybe that's why also somebody went away from because he got tzaraas.
It's possible. Yes, could be. Okay. Simon Shloisha Ro Vachesi Vakaru. So now we're going to have a few things that Rabbi Yochanan says about Doeg. Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Shloisha Malacha Chabola Nizamnu Lo Doeg. three destroying malachim came and encountered David. Echad sheshikach tamudei, one made him forget his learning. The echad shesoraf nishmasei, the second one burnt his neshama, which, as we said before, he has no chelik l'olam haba, so therefore means his neshama is gone. The echad shepizer atzorei b'batik nisias of batim medrashes, the third one scattered his ashes in the shuls and in batim medrash. Doesn't necessarily literally mean his ashes; it could mean metaphorically. And in fact, some of the mafarshim say that actually it was meant as a good thing for him. Like this, the chachamim are, so to speak, stepping on his ashes means they remember what happened to him, and that itself is a kapara for him. That itself makes up for the averus that he did. That everybody learns a lesson from him not to behave like that ever again, and that itself helps me be a kapara for him.
What
and eventually, that the Eibishter can give him a chelik l'olam haba after that.
Worst avera?
Killing Novi Rakonim was pretty bad.
That was.
Yeah. Amar Rabbi Yechonon. Doeg v'achitofel lo rozeste. Doeg and Achitofel, two of David's great enemies, never saw each other. Achitofel was only born after Doeg died. Doeg be me Shol, v'achitofel me David, because Doeg was in the times of Shol. Achitofel was in the times of David. And in particular, we find Achitofel mainly, the big thing we find with him is near the end of David's life, when Avshalom rebelled, which was like 3 years before David passed away. And so, V'omer Rabbi Yechonon, and Rabbi Yechonon says, Doeg v'Achitofel lechotzi yameim. Doeg and Achitofel didn't live out even half their days. Men of blood and deceit will not live out half their days. At the top of the Amud, we mentioned that Bilam, for that reason, lived to be only 33. By the same token, Doeg lived to be only 34. And Achitofel lived to be only 33. And that's the point, by the way. Since Achitofel died, actually committed suicide, during Avshalom's rebellion, which is 37 years into David's kingship, and if we're saying he was 33, that 3 years before David himself died, yeah, that means, therefore, if we're saying Achitofel lived to 33, means he was born 4 years after David became king. By that time, we're saying Doeg was dead already, because Doeg was in Shaul's time. So that's what we mean, that they didn't see each other.
They did.
No, they didn't. That's the point. Doeg died shortly after Shaul died. In fact, that Rashi I mentioned before on Malachim says, according to the opinion that the Rashi brings over there, that the Ben Ish Gera Malachi, who comes and reports that Shaul died and that he gave them the final blow or whatever, that it was Doeg, the pasuk continues over there, that David executed him. How you talking, you dared to kill the king. So then in that case, so even if it wasn't Doeg, fine. The point is, we don't find Doeg in the Pesukim after that. He's gone from the picture. So apparently he passed away not long after that. So then in that case, after Shaul's death, and then we're saying David becomes king at that point, but only 4 years later is Achitofel born. So that's what we mean, that Loi Roh was there said. They didn't see each other, and Marashah makes the point of it, like we said before, the point of it is that it was a chesed to David, because if Doeg and Achitofel had been in the world at the same time, he might not have been able to withstand.
He actually killed Shaul.
The pasuk says that the Ben Ish Gera Malachi says that he killed Shaul B'chlam. Mefarshim discussed the question, did he really, or was just claiming it because he figured David will give him a reward, whatever. And then on top of that, you have the question, was it actually Doeg, or was it somebody else? Okay.
Anyway. So David killed him without making sure that he actually had killed?
A king is allowed to kill without that. Well, that's according to him. He himself is saying that he, Joss Baldin, come and aid him, dummy. He himself is claiming that he killed Shaul, so David figured he had to make an example of him. Hadas Baldin, Kamei Adim Dami, you know. Hadas Baldin, of course, and Mitzvah into Basin, yeah. Kamei Adim Dami. And by the way, this that Achitofel lived to be 33. We learned earlier in the Masechta, the calculation, we said over there that Achitofel is Bathsheba's grandfather. And therefore Shlomo's great grandfather. Avshalom's rebellion happened. What did we say when Shlomo was 7 years old? What Shlomo? Yeah, a few blocks ago. The Gemara said that Achitofel one time saw a vision where fire is coming out of his aver. He thought it means he's destined to be the king, and it turned out he didn't realize that it means a descendant of aver is going to be king, named Shlomo.
Yeah, of course.
Anyway, so the Gemara calculates over there that we see if, therefore, Achitofel was 33 when his great-grandson Shlomo is 7, then it means everybody there had children at very young ages. We learned that back in Perek Ben Sora Remoto, where the Gemara was calculating how in the dirt sort of showing people had children at younger ages. Okay. Originally, David called Achitofel his Rebbe. all because you learn two halachas from him, as we know in Pirkei Avos. All of a sudden, Kore Chaveri, later on he called him his colleague, like David became greater, or Achitofel went down, and therefore now they're on an equal level. It could be either way. All of a sudden, Kore Talmido, and later on, we find that David even calls Achitofel his talent. B'tchila Kore Rabbi, because he says, V'ata enesh kerki alufi yumiudai. He says, the Pasuk in Tehillim, you're a man of my caliber, my Rebbe, alufi means my Rebbe, umiudai, and my relative. It actually explains a couple of blocks ago that actually Achitofel was from Shevet Yehuda, same Shevet as David, so therefore he's actually David's relative.
But not really,
The point is alufi, you're my Rebbe, that's the main point. Later on, he calls him his colleague, because in that same capital, he says, it's actually the next pasuk over there in that capital, capital Nunhei, Asher Yachtav Namsiksoi, that together we would talk about sweet secrets of Torah, Bevesalakim Nahalach Berogish, we would go eagerly to the house of Hashem. Berogesh means to run, that's actually, it's brought, that this is one of the two things that Achitofel taught David, that you should run to Shul. So the fact that he says Yachtav implies we're on an equal level. We're chavrus. So first he says Rebbe. I think so, yeah. But Berogish means like with excitement. So therefore Yachtav, now we're learning together. It's chavrus. So first he's Alufi and now he's a Yachtav. Although the first Kore Talmid, later on, David calls Achitofel his Talmid. How so? Because in a different capital, he says, "Gam ish shloimi ashevakachti boy." Also, the person that I thought I was at peace with, that I trusted, namely Achitofel, "Oichel lachmi," the one who ate my bread, which means Rashi says, "Learned Torah for me." Higdil alai. No, it just means he learned Torah for me. In the simple, and on the chat level, it means like people who ate at his table or whatever. Higdil alai okev has now raised up his heel against me, like to crush me. So we see he's calling him Oichel Lachmi, that Achitofel is now the person, he betrayed David unexpectedly like that, because all of a sudden he goes over to Avshalom. That's the point, he's called the Talmud, Oichel Lachmi. Before he joined Avshalom's forces and went against David, he had learned Torah from David, therefore he's David's Talmud. What? No, originally David learned from Achitofel two things.
Yeah, what?
In Hilkiah, but it doesn't spell it out. Rashi over there says, or other Mepharshim say, that he learned from him, first of all, that you should learn together with other people, don't just learn Torah by yourself. And two, this that we just said before, that you should run the shul.
You should run.
But afterwards, David taught Achitofel a lot more, and therefore Achitofel became David's Talmud. That's why he calls him Oichel Lachmi, the one who ate my bread.
Well,
Torah
is not.
Compared to bread, Torah is not. So Achitofel lived to 33. The last year of his life, the last little bit of his life is Avshalom's rebellion. So I guess up until that point.
He was good with it. Very, no problem.
Yeah. Up until that point, Achitofel had been David's most trusted advisor.
Well, he became jealous of David. You're supposed to mess up for 1 year.
That's true, actually. That's Achitofel pointed out to David that you're allowed to write the name of Hashem on a piece of earthenware and throw it into the... Right.
And
David had to worm it out of him, yeah. But, I did see something about that. I think the explanation was that David himself knew the halacha, he just wasn't sure about it, and Achitofel confirmed that this is Taka the halacha. So it's not like he taught David something new that he never knew before. I think that's the part.
Who do you have? There was Achitofel and Shimi Ben Gera.
Shimi Ben Gera, somebody else, that's another.
There's
a medrash that actually says that David had five Jewish enemies and Lahavdil five Goyish enemies.
He had five Jewish enemies.
Five Jewish enemies. Let me see. Doeg, Achitofel, Shimi, Shol, and I don't remember who the fifth one was. Avshalom, very good. Okay, and then among the Goyim, he had Goliath and his brothers, and then and Shofach, the general of Aram. Yeah. All right. Okay. So now, having talked about Doeg and Achitofel, now we're going to digress a little bit and talk about David and Bathsheba, which is connected really a little bit. First of all, we just said Bathsheba was Achitofel's granddaughter. As a matter of fact, some of the Mepharshim say that that's why Achitofel bided his time and held it against David. David all this time thought that Achitofel was friendly with him. Later on, when Achitofel realized he has a chance, when Avshalom is rebelling, why tack it? He'd go over to Avshalom's side because he resented David for the way he took Bathsheba.
So he's a hypocrite.
Dolzana, though, yeah, he was a hypocrite. But he
presented,
himself as a friend, yeah?
But really,
okay, so that's some of the Mepharshim say that. But besides that, the Gemara is going to talk about later on. I don't think we're going to get to it today, but the Gemara talks about later on that David's enemies would even while they're learning Torah, would make fun of him about the fact that he got involved with Bathsheba, and therefore that's the connection of it with our Gemara. So, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav. And a person should never bring himself to a nisayon. The image to give you a nisayon, whether it's a nisayon or Abraham, that's different. But you shouldn't be asking for it. We say we didn't davening. I'll be in it. We didn't nisayon. Shari David Melech Yisrael, he be asking, we didn't nisayon the nechshol, because we see that David Melech Yisrael brought himself to a nisayon. Yeah, and he stumbled in it. Namely, Amalafana. What happened was like this. David one time said to David, "Should the banish him?" Nickname Ma only Melakei Avraham, Melakei Yitzchok, Melakei Yaakov. The ain only Melakei David. Why is it in davening? We only mentioned that the Eivishter is associated with the Ovid, not with David. No, what's the? He wanted
because
to be on that.
Never asked Eivishter that he should pray Melakei Avraham.
No, but the point is that David wanted to be on the level of the Ovid. And in fact, Rabbi Kabbalah does talk about the idea that you have the Dalad Ragli Amerkava, that you have Avraham, Yitzchok, and Yaakov as three legs of the Merkava, and David is the fourth leg.
What about Moshe?
What about Moshe? Moshe is something else. Moshe is Raya Mehenga. That's a different thing. But
wasn't enough that Michelle will come from him?
He wanted to be on the level. He wanted to be on that high level. He wanted to be a Merkava, but he wanted to be one of the legs of the Merkava of the Eberstedt. So it's a good thing to aspire to.
And
by the way, there's a pasuk in the Lachim and the Yeshaya that uses the expression of a K-Jobid, but we never say it in davening. The Yerushalmi has a version of it that you say, like, "Hey, David," in Shemoneh Esrei, in the Bracha Tzemach, but Lamaisa, we don't do that.
Oh.
So David is asking, why not? Omar, so the Eibishter answers, "In whom mintuli, they all were tested by me, and they passed their test, but Achle mintuli, you never passed the Nisayim."
Well, that's how it came.
Omar Lafonov, so the Eibishter says, "Rebbeinu Shalom, v'chaneni v'naseni." Fine. Try me and test me. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, "Until him, v'chaneni Hashem v'naseni v'goymer." Test me, try me, Hashem, and test me.
But wait a minute, the others never asked you.
That's the point. Okay, nevertheless, though, the David is asking to be on that level. Well, fine, if I have to go through a Nisayan, yeah. Omar, so the Eibishter says, fine, min sinaloch, fine, I will give you a Nisayan, ba'avidna milsa ba'adoch diludidhu loy hagachinu, and I will actually, I'll give you a head start, kind of. I'll give you a bonus that they didn't have. I'll give you a head start that they didn't have. The others, I never informed them in advance what their Nisayan is going to be. Whereas I'm going to actually inform you what area of life your Nisayan is going to be in. I am going to be testing you on a matter of erva. No, not necessarily. The tenuous earnest of Avraham had nothing to do with Erva. He had a very hard life. But that's not the same. Challenges is one thing. Challenges everybody goes through in life. A Nisayan. Apparently not something that would be considered on the caliber of what the Ovis went through.
But the others didn't have any son of Zayah.
No, that's the point. The Eibishter is telling him, I'm going to give you a hint. Avraham, for example, doesn't know in advance that he's going to have an Nisayon, let's say, with sending away Yishmael or doing the Akedah, to give two examples from this week's parasha. So all of a sudden, one day the Eibishter comes and tells him, or Sarah comes and tells him, send away Yishmael, and he has to do it. One day the Eibishter comes and tells him, Kachna Asvincha, and he does it. The Eibishter is telling David, I'm giving you a head start. I'm telling you that you're gonna be tested in a matter of erva. So if you wanna pass this test, you know what's the area you need to be more vigilant in. So what happened? Miyad, so right after that, the pasuk describes by Hila is the erev, it happened in the evening. By Yochum David Ma'al Mishkov, that David got up from his bed. Now, what is he doing in his bed coming the beginning of the evening?
He wasn't married at the time?
No, what do you mean? David had many wives by that point. So what? That's the question. So that's the question. Why in the evening is he getting up from his bed? That's not the normal. That's the normal time you go to bed, if anything, yeah. Omer of Yehuda, Shahofach Mishkovah, Shalilo Mishkovah, Shodyon. What David did is he figured like this. Okay, if I'm going to have a Nisayan in a matter of Erva, then what I should try to do is weaken my Taiva for Erva. How should I do it?
He knew
that he's going to have this Nisayon. So now he figures like this. Let me weaken my Taiva. So what do I do? Normally a person has relations at night. This time what I'm going to do is I'm going to have relations during the day. So now in the evening he's getting up from his bed, Mishkaber, not just meaning his bed as in where he slept, but where he had relations. But he figured this way, a natural thing, that after a man has had relations, it's hard for him to have it for a while afterwards. He doesn't have as much of a type. But when it's alma menu halacha, however, David forgot a halacha meaning a well-known fact. Eva katan yesh ba'adam, there's a small eva in a person, meaning that eva. If a person satisfies it, then it's hungry. So like the more a person indulges in relations, the more he has a taiva for it. But if he makes it hungry, if he holds himself back, sabeya, then he feels full, then that itself weakens his taiva. So he made the mistake of thinking I'll have relations at a time when I usually wouldn't, and that'll reduce my taiva. Abba, all it did is inflamed it more. And by the way, some of the Rishonim say that the Eva Kot number here doesn't only mean that Eva. It means in general, a person's taivas in general. For the more a person satisfies a particular taiva, the more they have a craving for it. Whereas if a person controls any kind of taiva, food for example, within reason, a person has to eat at some point. But the point is,
saying here, all other taivas, the more you satisfy them, the less you want.
Generally speaking, taivas, the more you try to satisfy your taiva, the more you desire it, all the more so. Like you're never satisfied. Whereas if you control it, if you keep it, escapia, then that itself helps restrain, makes you feel full, makes you feel okay. I have what I need of it. I don't need it. Right.
Close to this.
As if, so that's David made that mistake of thinking that if he has relations, he won't have as much of a taiva for it afterwards. And instead, all it did is it made his taiva worse. So then, what happened? We'll continue tomorrow. That's the shame.
Okay, sure.